Making promises is probably one of the most significant things that an individual can do, and increases in intensity when it is considered a part of the leadership and management role. Promise-based management means making promises you can keep, and then keeping those promises when you make them. But making promises is really a strategic imperative. It requires some significant forethought and some careful consideration. One of the greatest problems in most businesses, whether they be small or large, is people overpromising or overcommitting and then failing to deliver on their commitment. The challenge for both the organization and for the customer is to make sure that there's a real goodness of fit between the promises made and promises kept. Nothing can be more debilitating to a professional or business relationship than making a promise, not keeping it minimally, or breaking it. This short podcast reflects the work by Saul and Spinoza in the April 2007 issue of Harvard Business Review, as they begin to extrapolate on promise-based leadership and the elements of making promises and keeping them. We'll be relatively short and move on to other elements, but I thought it was really important to the development of the leadership role to really come to understand the importance of your word, of your commitment to that word, the importance in terms of strategic and decision-making and action and direction for the organization based on the commitments that one makes. I can't tell you the number of times in my own work and consulting that I have come into organizations to react to many of the problems that emerged because a CEO or departmental or vice presidential leader overcommitted or overpromised in a way that simply could not be achieved or fulfilled and created all kinds of debilitating characteristics in the organization and levels of mistrust and lack of commitment. When an organization gets a sense of that level of mistrust and begins to break down the intensity of that relationship, the commitment, the energy, the collaboration, the cohesiveness of the organization also dissipates radically. And it's very difficult to get it back. One of the major problems for the leader is to try and get trust back after trust has been lost because a commitment or an honor or a promise made by a leader simply has not been kept or has been broken or has been actively counted by the behavior of the leader. So it's very important to recognize that the commitment that you make and the energy that you bring to that commitment are critical to the set of relationships that you will develop in undertaking work and advancing the organization. When you begin to realize that at the strategic level, when an organization makes a commitment to a community or to a customer or to another organization and doesn't keep its promise, major legal and ethical and strategic as well as financial and economic concerns can result and can create some major trauma for both organizations and all of the people related to that challenge of promise or commitment made anywhere at the systems level. While that level of intensity is more apparent and certainly more clear to a broader range of folks, the intensity of feeling and of reaction and of impact operates just as significantly at the one-to-one relational level as it does to the larger social level. Saul and Spinoza contend that their research reflects that commitment suggests that work stalls in the organization when people fail to make and deliver on their promises, and all kinds of significant and serious impacts occur. So they really kind of suggest some of the issues of the action of negative forces with regard to promises and to how they impede getting things done in an organization and what might be some of the remedies and responses to them. The first thing that they certainly identify is that organizational silos strongly hinder coordination, communication, and interaction between and among the members of an organization. Now, their belief is that the root causes of this are that requests and promises are honored within units, but are often considered as optional between or among various units. Secondly, they suggest that requests and promises made across units are viewed as political struggles for power, inherently breeding distrust. So that often what you can see in an organization, if we extrapolate this broadly, is that you can develop strong unit cohesion and commitment and energy and keep your promises and all of the promises that are made at that level of the organization almost as a way of isolating the unit from its relationship to others. A lot of times this is seen in the rah-rah approach to building a unit and building its energy and its camaraderie and its identity, but doing so at the expense of the relationship of that unit with all of the other units, so that the unit sees itself as almost separate from or distinct from its relationship with the other units that make up the whole organization. Creating that usually ends up breeding a huge range of organizational problems, especially distrust. Now, some of the remedies recommended are for leadership in the organization to publicly monitor the progress of requests and promises made across the unit so that we can see, number one, that the promises are consistent with the overall strategic direction of the organization or the intent of the organization, number one, and that promises are not made that in some way expend the relationship between units or even create relationships within units that are not legitimate or may create problems later on. Secondly, they suggest an obstacle that is significant with regard to this issue is the lack of engagement of associates and people, professionals that one works with. Some of the causes for lack of engagement is that these associates or partners fail to see the link between corporate strategy and their own activities. This breach is probably one of the most significant that you as an innovation leader will see in organizations. One of the most significant challenges in organizations is to be able to help those at the point of service link the efforts that they are undertaking to the strategic life and direction and future of the organization, and actually vice versa. There are, I think, infinitely more sets of circumstances where those who are leaders of the organization lack the specific and clear insight about the impact that those at the point of service or the point of productivity have with regard to the organization's ability to achieve its objectives. One of the most significant issues of failure in an organization is this lack of connection between the strategic direction set by the executives of the organization and the clinical, critical activities of those at the point of service. If they aren't aligned, if they aren't cohesive, if they aren't in some way directly connected, everything that goes on in between those two levels of activity begins to break down and then begins to be self-serving, not serving the organization, not serving purpose or direction, and therefore not fulfilling the strategy of the organization. Both ends of that spectrum of relationship, the executive relationship with the professional relationship, the core relationship, the work relationship, must act in concert, must be cohesive, must in some way consense around the strategic and directional imperative of the organization so that all of the roles in the system are an expression of that strategic intent, and that in carrying out that role, each individual can recognize that by doing the work he or she does, by advancing the activities that they apply, by undertaking their clinical activities, they are assuring not only the immediate satisfaction of the client, customer, patient, provider relationship, but the integrity, the thriving of the organization, and the cohesion of their activity with the strategic intent of that organization over the long term. Now, also remember in this particular set of circumstances that the professionals, the people at the point of service, can, in a highly structured, hierarchical, or directed organization, feel unable to decline or renegotiate activities, requests, directions, orders, or whatever it might be that's coming from outside of their own work set, and therefore end up overcommitted, overrolled, overfunctioned, and essentially overproducing. This happens so often in hospitals, especially with point-of-service clinical providers. They don't realize or aware that a part of their professional obligation is to negotiate expectations and roles and requests and task assignments and all the things that come from outside of their work set in a way that creates a goodness of fit with their own professional obligations without building that sort of equity of relationships between the management and leadership elements of the organization with the professional and clinical elements of the organization. That collaborative horizontal relationship begins to break down, and then one begins to assume only roles that unfold within a hierarchical framework. And so what happens is that the professional at the point of service begins to believe that the appropriate and legitimate direction for all activities and requests and decisions about what that person does or does not do comes from above. And what happens is that not being true, because those that come from above are not fully engaged themselves in the actual work or the professional activities or the delivery of care, they begin to get inculcated in other activities that the organization values out of lack of consultation with those at the point of service, and begin to load those at the point of service with all kinds of activities that may or may not be directly related to what they do, may indeed be peripheral to what they do, but create a workload beyond the individual's ability to cope. And increasingly, as that lack of ability to cope expands to the group as a whole, then some real noise in the system with regard to the goodness of fit of the requests that came from the top and the activities and functions of the clinical providers based on the demand that comes from the point of service cease to fit, cease to correlate together, cease to create a real goodness of fit in a way that actually advances or facilitates the activity, and begins to be self-serving and limiting, coercive, overwhelming, and diminishing in terms of intent, purpose, real value, and outcome. And today, in hospitals, that is perhaps one of the most serious and significant challenges to the effectiveness of clinical relationship. So much of the tasks and activities related to maintaining a safe environment and delivering high-quality care now comes from people outside of the frame of reference of the point of service and those who live there, and are laid upon the work of those people instead of renegotiated and incorporated with them in conjunction with what they have to do based on a common renegotiation of roles and relationships, interactions and functions on a peer-based professional frame. Without doing that, the imbalance in the system becomes so overwhelming that a lack of focus, a lack of attention, a lack of follow-through, a lack of competence in being able to undertake an overwhelming set of tasks overwhelms the system, the people in it, and the relationships, and begins to break down the intensity of the operating system in a significant way. Next, one of the large articles of overcommitment and perhaps lack of trust and all of the variables that relate to creating mistrust in an organization and being unclear of promise is essentially a lack of clear accountability and a delineation of that accountability and the roles associated with it at the various components of the organization and the various places where decision and actions are undertaken. You know, usually in this scenario, promises are often made in private or they're not clear or not definitive. They're sometimes not tracked. They're not clearly delineated or assigned in ways that can be understood by all the stakeholders. Managers refuse to express the lack of accountability in their own roles or in roles in other places in the organization. The lack of clarity of accountability becomes a major operating obstacle to really being able to fulfill the intent and direction of the organization. You know, in the case of accountability, accountability should be public and clear. Roles and expectations and all of the functions and activities that relate to them should be clearly understood, first, of course, by those who are going to play them out, but also, as importantly, to all other roles in the organization that have some relationship or dependence on the accountability of any given role. Perhaps in the U.S., one of the greatest crises we have as a nation is this crisis of accountability. Nobody knows for sure who is accountable for what. As a matter of fact, in many organizations and roles, people purposefully and with great commitment try to avoid indications of accountability or clarity related to accountability so that nobody knows where the blame lies, such that if something happens or some difficulty occurs, the accountability was so unclear that no locus of control can be laid for it, and blame can be generously generated throughout several layers or roles in the organization. This crisis of accountability invades almost every aspect of our nation, from the President of the United States and the Congress to major corporations. Clearly, in the recent history of the United States, in terms of market challenges, the mortgage challenge, the airline industry, and the problems associated with CEO accountability and role accountability and promises made, mortgage loans sold by those who were supposed to know better and who were making promises to customers that they knew couldn't be fulfilled, with the customers unaware of the intricacies of the mortgage environment being promised those things that they did not fully understand. And then when all of it broke down and all of it began to have an impact, the amount of buck passing and lack of clarity and lack of locus of control and cover-ups and all of the things that simply occur because accountability is not clear. Nobody expresses that accountability with a level of clarity so that when an issue arises or a problem or a concern is generated, it can be located quickly, isolated, corrected, changed, adjusted, fixed, whatever needs to happen in an efficient and effective way. The more ambiguous the accountability in the organization, the more obtuse the problem location, the more difficult the problem finding, the problem solving, and the outcome impacts that are necessary to make significant change can be obtained in the organization. So this lack of accountability, lack of generation of the clarity of that accountability, the lack of publicity of that accountability at every level of the organization, actually in the long run, diminishes the effectiveness of the organization, the effectiveness of people, the quality of life, the quality of the work, the impact of good outcomes, and the viability of the organization over the long term. And it becomes significant when it is generated as a social condition, such as what we are currently experiencing in the United States. Remember that one of the things that you want to do is make sure that accountability has been acknowledged, has been articulated and identified in the various roles, functions, and activities of the organization, at the various places those roles, functions, and activities are legitimately located and purposely carried out. That those accountabilities are public and clear, not only to the individuals who are fulfilling those roles, but to the organization as a whole, so that everybody knows where accountability for what is located in the organization. That way, when promises are made and commitments are undertaken, the accountability related to them is publicly, the progress can be tracked clearly, transparency can exist in the organization, and with the ability to maintain public clarity of accountability, to maintain the tracking of the expression of that accountability and correcting whatever needs to be corrected along the way, then positive outcomes can be obtained, corrective action can be effectively undertaken, and organizational vitality and life can be successfully sustained over the long term. Also, in this issue of accountability, it's important to review accountabilities periodically with stakeholders that have some relationship to them, so that it can be very clear to all of the players what the accountability is, whatever changes might have occurred in that accountability that are critical to the roles that are being played, and some of the elements related to the evaluation of those roles and of that accountability. More important is really a full understanding of the functional integrity, if you will, that's necessary to sustaining people's commitment and viability, action and accountability at any given time in the organization. And that in so doing, everybody can be clear about what it is they do and contribute to the vitality and the effectiveness of that organization. And when that changes, as it invariably does in all work, at all times, change occurs, that review of those accountabilities can be reconfigured or refitted, if you will, with the new work expectations as technology and improvements in process and that kind of thing change functions and activities. That way, people are constantly monitoring, reaffirming, recommitting themselves to the accountabilities that are a fundamental subset of their individual roles. Now, another thing that affects the ability of an organization and of individuals to keep their promise is the organization and the individual's lack of agility. Now, this usually is caused by leaders and managers that are slow to capture the emerging opportunities that affect the organization and the work they do because they work so hard to come to complete agreement in their assessments and to strive for perfection or perfect solutions to problems that exist. One of the things that's really important for leaders to understand is there is no perfection. As a leader, you are constantly managing the reality of continuous and endless and dynamic imperfection. There is constant change and transformation and growth and new. There's technological change, innovation change, change in thinking, all of which raises the standard. But one of the things that's very important for the leader to understand is that this standard is a dynamic. It's a continuous and endless, cyclical, dynamic, moving forward. While it takes us to higher levels of conceptualization, higher levels of quality of life and quality of experience and work, those levels are in themselves not complete. They are also a part of future transition. So the imperfections and inadequacies and incompleteness of the current stage cannot be made complete and perfect. It can only be changed as the bar is raised, and that the leader is constantly managing this trajectory of the bar being raised, of managing the imperfections at the level that you find them, of creating the conditions and circumstances to manage the chaos, the noise, the uncertainties, the incongruities, the problems, the struggles, the challenges that come with moving just a little bit further, taking on something new, something energizing, something growing, something becoming, something building, something renewing, something innovative. With all of the challenges, all of the incompleteness, all of the noise and the elements that are embedded therein. One of the things that is probably most difficult for managers and leaders with regard to the staff is to help the staff understand that incompleteness, lack of perfection, continuous movement, constant and dynamic change is the normative and natural condition of all work. Work will never be perfect. Work will never be complete. Work will never be an end in itself. Work is always a means. And work will always change. And you are, as leaders, are managing constant change. Remember, for the professional, change is the work. The work of the professional is to change things, to constantly change things so that they are better, they are improved, they are advanced. They raise the bar. They improve our human condition, the quality of our life. That, for the professional, is the work. And to do that work means to contend with the constant movement and journeying towards the next thing that represents an improvement over the last thing. And that in the workplace, this dynamic is currently and and constantly operating as a condition of work. And the leader is constantly creating the conditions that allow these forces to converge in a way that allows us to examine them, to respond to them, to act on them, to evaluate them, and then ultimately to change them for the next level of growth. So for the organization to maintain its agility, leaders should empower the people of the organization to seek out the right balance of talents and people and resources in a transparent way that make the resources necessary to be available for responding to the constantly emerging opportunities. That really means configuring the organization, the processes, the roles, the resources, the supports to help the organization respond to a change in its condition in a positive and meaningful way, so that it's not surprised or overwhelmed by those changes. And the other thing is to try, especially in healthcare, this is a very, very difficult balance, but it's one that really needs to be thought about seriously and negotiated positively. And that's to introduce a quote, good enough framework or prototype for work, and refining that good enough over time as the inputs of new thinking and new technology, new data and new quality initiatives reinform what one is doing, change the dialogue, and raise the stakes for doing it differently. Because this is a way, essentially, of renegotiating one's promises and commitments based on new information, new circumstances, new data, as it tells us that we need to do things differently and become different. And finally, with regard to agility, honoring promises rather than simply checking off boxes to demonstrate compliance. Nurses are perhaps the worst with regard to this. Compliance becomes really, really critical. I imagine that a lot of it is because that's been rammed down their throat and they've been hit over the head with compliance, so much so that there's almost fear embedded in any activity that's undertaken because everybody's worrying about whether some factor of compliance is being compromised or some way not honored. Looking at all elements of measure simply as tools of advancing the agenda or the cause or the work or the quality helps offset this rabid attention to consequence and to compliance so that there can be a more rational relationship between action and purpose and outcome. Those become critical variables that help determine the viability of any action or work or change in the organization. Next, stakeholders often don't trust leaders and managers and executives to honor their commitment. Sometimes they don't trust the commitments themselves that are made by these people, because one of the things that's happened so often in the workplace is the promises have been broken so many times that people no longer trust promises and really expect them to be broken, so they discount them immediately. You can imagine once that has happened more than two or three times that people just begin to shrug their shoulders and say, oh, here they go again, or here we go again. What's the point? Why bother paying any attention? Why don't we just let them talk, let them work it out, and then we'll just keep doing what we do, and eventually what they say will go away, and hopefully, if given enough impetus, they'll go away, leave us alone, and let us do our job. Now, a lot of the cause of that is that the cumbersomeness of the requirements of management and some of the ridiculousness in terms of the obligations that are created at the point of service from the perspective of those who live there overwhelm the sense that they find in anything that might come from above, from leadership or management in the organization. So it becomes really critical that leaders make promises to the stakeholders publicly so that it's available to all, that these promises be credible, and that the promises reflect a negotiation, an interaction with those at the point of service who have played a role as giving value or giving input or giving content predominantly to the promise that's made, so that the credibility is expanded and is engendered in the promise, because the credibility itself is embedded in the relationships that were established before the promise was made, so that the promise that was made was consistent with the values and commitments that were negotiated by all of the stakeholders who had some relationship to that promise. That way, transparency is present, engagement is present, ownership is present, and the promise is not unilateral and directed from the top, as is often traditionally seen. Finally, the organization is trapped into the status quo. The status quo is probably one of the greatest dangers to the organization, and the greatest dangers to the vitality of the organization over time. Usually what happens in maintaining the status quo is that senior levels of the organization articulate a new strategy, but the organization actually continues to behave in the old way. The old infrastructure, the old relationships, the old decisions, the old processes, the old values, mechanisms, evaluations, and the components related to it stay in place. Nobody actually sees anything different or behaves any differently, so the organization remains essentially constant, and the firm or the hospital or whatever the organization is never changes. So a part of what leaders must do is recognize that a change in strategy requires a new set of promises and a new infrastructure within which those promises unfold, and that leaders must articulate the promises with regard to new strategy in a public way so that everybody understands them and engages everybody else in renegotiating how those promises will be fulfilled, how will they will be kept, how the outcomes will be achieved, and how the stakeholders will be continuously engaged. And it's virtually impossible to overpromise and overcommit when the stakeholders, all invested in this process, are engaged in a dialogue and a set of relationships that are based on trust, on transparency, on accountability, and an openness to each other. Through this building of a trusting and invested relationship, promise-based leadership and management can work, and the commitments that are embedded in it can be shared by all who have a stake in it, and outcomes and results can be advanced in a meaningful and viable way.